You know, changing from sitting to standing is very much like a plié. It's perhaps a little more difficult because of the nature of the weight support, but let's see if we can do it in a way to make it smooth and relatively easy. If you walk forward on the sit bones, and then we can put one foot behind the forward foot so that this foot is pretty much under the acetabulum or close to it. Then perhaps fold forward and then push from the floor into the acetabulum to raise your weight. And take a step or so away from the bench to break your old pattern, to change your old pattern. Bounce on the femur heads. And then step back and do the same thing in reverse. In other words, you're letting the prying action, which activates those deep pelvic muscles that control your weight transfer, until your sit bones touch the bench, and then give you compression support so that you won't need that tensile support of the muscles when you sit. Let's walk forward again and get some practice in on that. Put one foot behind the other. Then you're going to fold forward. Now remember, there's no arm effort in this. Just push from the floor into the acetabula there. Just take a step away to balance out your muscle action, a little bouncing. Okay. And then we come back. Put one foot behind the other. And you lower the weight. Okay. This time, let's do this with the leg you didn't use before. One should alternate in changing from sitting to standing. You shouldn't use the same leg all the time. In fact, while I'm thinking about it, I meant to bring this out at another time and neglected to do so. It's a good idea to use different sides of your body for different movements. Don't use the same side all the time. For instance, use your left hand to do tasks as well as your right. Things you do every day, opening doors or picking up an object or even handing a clerk change or money or whatever. Don't always do it with the whatever handed you are, that's your handedness. We're not trying to destroy that. That needs to be there. But you can still do things with both sides of the body. Just as those of you who are dancers, when you study dance movement, you don't just do the dance movement on one side, but you do it on both sides. Let that be an everyday practice, including this. So now we're going to use the leg you didn't use before. And then you're going to pull forward, pushing from the floor, and pry yourself up. Okay, and let's balance on the two thigh bone. Now we can use this same principle in climbing the stairs. We climb the stairs a couple of different ways, bouncing on the femur heads and the weight resting on the femur heads, and that's fine. The old image is not to be discarded. I'm just trying to give you a choice of different ways to look at balance. There's no real one way that you have to do it. Well, let's go outside now and climb the stairs. I know it's a little chilly. You might want to put your shoes on. Go out and do that. Even when you step down, you can step You can think of the floor pushing up against the leg into the femur socket to take you down. Now, before we start climbing, one thing I want to add, so I can challenge Kathy here, who's going to be a technician at this. Let's do a plie out here, actually, all right? And your weight's on your femur heads. Now, when you come up, you're going to push from the floor into the acetabula, but can you also watch your spine lengthen as you do that so that there is no element of the raising of your weight by grabbing down here? This is releasing into length as you come up. This is going down as you push into the femur sockets with that action that lengthens. Tail. Okay, so that is going to happen as you climb the stairs. Excuse me, let me start it. I'm going to push from the floor into my acetabulum as my tailbone lengthens. Going very long. Okay. So, climb the stairs. Put some hot ginger compresses around the throat, it'll help.
Ginger?
Compresses.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. As hard as you can stand it, you know, not to burn.
I have a little 10-year-old boyfriend who, when he gets a sore throat, he says, Mom, I need a ginger compress. I need a ginger. Mom, I need it.
Now, let's do the cycle of the arms above the head sitting. We never did it sitting, but it's a good position from which to do that, thinking up the front and down the back. then you can blow through the imaginary straw, and at the end of the blowing, let your arms drop. And just shrug your shoulders with soft elbows and then drop. Again, shrug your shoulders, soft elbows, let them drop. Now, would you imagine that image I gave you yesterday of the puppeteer suspending you from the manubrium? And could you for a moment imagine that the suspension is so strong that your sit bones aren't quite touching the bench as you sit. So it's like they're off the bench a little bit. And what's going to let them come onto the bench is that the spine is like taffy, particularly the lower back. It's so soft that the weight, the heavy weight of the pelvis brings it down onto the benches, and this lengthens, and you let it lengthen, but you still have that same support at the manubrium from the puppeteer. Just think that for a moment. And you can focus on the softness of the spine at whatever point you feel you need it most. Lower back is usually the area where a lot of us tend to tighten it, push it forward to sort of brace ourselves in sitting, you know. So you want to get a sense of letting the lower spine and back in particular be like taffy, soft, lengthening as the puppeteer supports you in front. That's another way to get the balance between tensile and compression forces. Now, we'll come back to that in just a moment. We'll come back to that in just a moment. Now, I want to add to that, letting the ribs rest in the spine. Just let the ribs rest in the spine. Lean against the spine. Remember, they have that support in back. We've just taken the support of the ribs in front with the tensile image. And now to maybe help you get an insight or a sense of centering the ribs in back, let's just do a little turn to one side or the other. Maybe everybody should turn the same way so we don't have any collisions. Say everybody turn to the right for a moment. And think of the ribs on the right side there, in particular, sinking into the spine as you make the turn. You see, instead of pulling them away, it makes the turn easier too. And then you can just come back. And now very easily turn to the right again. Let the ribs center in the spine. Think of those ribs just sinking in the spine. And let's come back. Forward. And again, let's just take the turn to the left. Let the ribs sink in the spine. And then come back forward. Now, will you watch? Well, first of all, I want to just renew with you the head balance. Put your fingers up here and renew the image of the head balanced on the top of the spine. And maybe letting the head just have a little rocking action. think of the sternum, instead of being supported by the puppeteer, let me give you an alternative image. Just think of it floating up. And it floats up toward that point where your head rests on the spine. It floats up there. It floats up to where your head is resting on the spine. That's a beautiful image to work on. It's long term. I'm going to give you something a little more gross than that so that you can get in touch with this on a gross level and then refine it to this as you cultivate it. The sternum, as I told you yesterday, it has muscles that come into the mastoid processes that help with the suspension here. If we were to pass a plane through the cardinal coronal plane or the median coronal plane, passing it through the head divides the head into a front half and a back half, even as it does the rest of the body. So the back half of the head is really, in essence, serving as the compression member to which those muscles are attached that help to support the sternum. So the back half of the head actually then is the puppeteer, partially at least. So the image I'm going to give you for that, and we're going to physicalize it actually, is that the back half of the head slides up. And as the back half of the head slides up, as opposed to, I can't manipulate that because it won't work, as opposed to this, you see, that's automatically, if you do that in a nice fashion and balance your head at the lateral occipital joint, think of the back half of the head sliding up. That's going to help create this support here at the maneuver. That is to say, that's another way to think about the puppeteer. So, I want you to put your fingers again in the crevices there between the front of the mastoid process and the back of the jaw. That's our central point. And as you nod your head, when you nod it forward, it's a small, gentle movement, but think of the back half of the head sliding up. In other words, I want an awareness in your being to begin to manifest itself that this is moving up as you move the head forward. It's as if the back part goes up. That's what you want to think. More than this, you want to think more up. As you do that movement. And it's very gentle, and just think it. That's the idea. Very nice. You're getting a nice thing for this. Okay. But nice and easy here, Robert. It's nice and easy. Now, what you've got to add to this is that the spine lengthens from below. As the back half of the head slides up easily, 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 you let go of the lower end of the spine so that it gets longer. That's the idea. That's the idea. It's just a little tiny movement. A little bit of that in it. Yes. Now, I'm going to keep coming back to that because that, as I'm going to show you in just a few moments, is creating the support for the shoulders. The next exciting chapter in this little story will take place after I find out who's here. And is Jamie here? vertical position, the shoulder girdle and the arms are not involved in the support of the weight of the torso. Let's see what the shoulder girdle is. Shoulder girdle consists of these two long bones here, the long curved bones called the clavicles, and the scapulae here in back. I'm going to really include the arms with the shoulder girdle since the two are very closely connected here at these joints, which I'll point out in just a moment. I said that the shoulder girdle is not involved in the support of the weight of the torso in the upright position. What does support the shoulder girdle is the spine, and here's the way it does that. The weight is resting of the shoulder girdle is resting on the manubrium. The support for the manubrium we've established through the tensile support that comes from the muscles coming up into the base of the neck, and also the first rib, which serves to brace the support with its tensile support and its compression support into the spine. And that's true, again, of the entire support of the rib cage. I told you yesterday the ribs transmit the weight of the entire structure that's connected to it, all the soft tissue and whatever else, all the way to the rib cage, transfers at each rib level back to the spine. So what we're adding to that this morning is the shoulder girdle being supported by the spine instead of trying to support weight with the shoulder girdle. And the shoulder girdle is delicately balanced here in terms of its compression support on the manubrium. It's very much like a mobile. I'm trying to give you some descriptive terms to discourage you from using your shoulders as weight bearers. We all bear the weight of the world upon our shoulders, so many of us, psychologically and even physically, we try to bring weight into the shoulders. When you carry objects, that's why I was giving you that image of letting the weight rest on the femur heads, which is what's going to happen to the weight at some point when you're standing, because the weight that the spine is supporting or bearing transfers through the pelvis, and then when you're standing under the femur heads.
Mm-hmm. Because we think of the ribs being supported by the spine and the back, and then not think of the manubrium also holding up the ribs in front?
No, you could think of... Well, no, I wouldn't think of the manubrium holding the ribs up. I would think more of the ribs holding the manubrium up there as they thrust into the spine, because there's a thrust going through there. It's almost as if they lift, as if they lift the manubrium. I'd think of it that way. I think it'd be a better way to think about it. Now, I want to talk a little bit about this structure here so that we understand it more. If you look at the clavicles here, they have this attachment, as I pointed out, at the manubrium, where you have ligaments binding bone to bone. We call that a strong bony attachment. A ligament is strong bony attachments, that kind of a joint. At the ends of the clavicles here, where they connect to the part of the scapula, which is called the acromion process. This is actually not a part of the scapula, but what the scapula has formed into, the acromion process. That also is a ligamentous attachment here. But That's only the shoulder girdle attaching itself together. The only strong bony connection of the entire shoulder girdle, where bone is attached to bone by means of ligament, to the trunk of the body is here at the manubrium. So that again is where your shoulders are based, on the manubrium. And that's point number one. Kinesthetic point number one we'll be working on this morning. The second thing, and this is really almost a part of this first thing, is that since there is no other ligamentous attachment of the entire shoulder girdle or the trunk of the body, that is that the scapula have no ligamentous attachments either to the ribs or the spine, but only muscles which attach them. That means that we need to think of the shoulder blades really separate or free of the ribs, not stuck together. So we're going to be using some images this morning in which we create a soft space between scapula and ribs by placing as an image between the scapula and the ribs some soft medium. And I'll be giving you those images in just a moment. Let's now come back to the shoulder girdle here and its base at the manubrium. What I did earlier in class was to image and process you to create a support for the scapula, for the clavicles here, by working the image of the back half of the head sliding up, the puppeteer giving you support here, so that this support would be created in terms of the process of imagery. So that when we let the shoulders rest on the sternum here, it's not from a collapsed beginning, but rather from the standpoint of it having a nice support. It's very interesting as you look at this complex series of compression and tensile support here. I said it's like a mobile, and that's exactly what it's like, because again, you have tensile support with the muscles coming into the head and spine. And then you have the compression support on the first rib bracing into the spine. And then, of course, the compression support which the spine affords all the attachments to it, whether they be tensile or compression members. By the way, that is one thing I meant to make clear I did not, and that is that all tensile members in any structure depend ultimately on a compression support. Can you see that? That you cannot have tensile support in midair. It has to attach to a compression member. For instance, this hook here of the skeleton is attached to this compression member which is resting on the floor. So the skeleton, while it's hanging from the hook, ultimately its weight is being supported by the floor, which has come down through the base here. All right, now let's again proceed from general to specific. I think maybe that coming to standing for a moment and finding those sternoclavicular joints would be in order. And then we'll refine what we're going to do in the sitting position. If you lift one of your clavicles up and forward, and then you can take your fingers and trace the bone from the distal end back toward the manubrium. And once you get back here, can't do it too well with my recorder here, And then you can let the arm drop. Okay? And the image that I'll give you is that the arm is simply a continuation of the clavicle, so that you think of your arm as being this long rather than this long. It's the same principle I gave you when I gave you the epaulets and the tassels of the epaulets through the fingertips. All right? Now, with that image in mind, that is your arm hanging from here, will you swing your arm and let the momentum die of its own inertia? So that it just pops. And once again, let's swing the arm. Letting the momentum die of its own inertia. And the arm just hanging from that point. Okay, let's go to the other side and lift the clavicle up and forward. And trace the bone back to the sternoclavicular articulation and then let the arm hang. Think of the arm, again, being all the way to here. Here to here. Long. Now, with that image, swing the arm. Once again, let's swing the arm. Okay. Now let both arms hang down by your sides. And let's swing the arm. Both. And then just let the arms die, the momentum die of its own inertia. Let's do the dancer's side bend or lateral flexion, thinking of the arm, particularly the one toward which you're leaning, hanging from the manubrium, so that you don't pull any weight into the arm. Let it hang as a tensile member. That's your image. And it's hanging in your image from the manubrium. Now, your weight is resting on mostly on the femur head toward which you're leaning. To come up, just as if you gently push from the floor into the acetabulum, letting the weight out of the arm constantly, so you don't pull any weight into your arm, and you come up to vertical and balance on two thigh bones. And your arm is beginning to feel a little longer already. Let's complete the job by leaning in the same direction again. Now, when you do that bend as if you're going over a barrel, so that it's up and over rather than just a collapse. Don't collapse into this movement. Your central axis is bending and it's lengthening as it bends. That's the simplest way to think about it. Now the arm is hanging from the manubrium and you're going to push from the floor with that supporting leg right into the acetabulum so that the weight in the arm can keep dropping out. No holding. An arm, as you rest on your femur head, probably feels a little longer. And that's fine. Now, let's go in the opposite direction. Let's just fold. And you're going to lean. Okay. And the weight is resting on the femur head. Okay, now you're going to push from the femur head the femur head into the socket and let the weight continue to fall out of the arm. And once again, let's just lean, hold over. Now, as you let your weight rest on your femur head, let the weight of the arm drop, weight out of the arm. Push from the floor into the acetabulum, and that's going to take you up. balance on the two femur heads. Again, let the weight of the arms rest on the femur heads. And your arms probably feel a little longer than usual. A little bouncing on the femur heads. Okay, now have a seat, and I want to get into another layer, another depth of this as an image. The shoulders, as I've indicated, based on the top of the sternum through the clavicle here, that's a delicate balance. Again, it's like a mobile. And the little process we're going to do now is a delicate one that you will probably find quite beneficial as you get more into this. I don't mean just this morning, but I mean if I'm hoping you will continue to practice some of these things from time to time. But what it is, in order to help get this joint centered, we're going to image a circling under the clavicle here, around the rim of it, the head of the clavicle, under it, and then up the back of it, and over the top, and down the front. Turn it to the side so you can see. You're going to think of going under, that's into the depth of the body, up the back of it, over the top, and down the front. Okay. Everybody see the direction of that and the location? Going under it, from front to back, under the clavicle, up the back of it, over the top, and down the front. Beg your pardon? That's around the head, you're imagining around the head of the clavicle here. That's to help center that joint, very much the way we centered the iliofemoral, by thinking into it. So, we'll do that now. The tactile aid you'll give yourself is to take your fingers and run them toward the sternoclavicular, and you'll be in the vicinity of that. If you're anywhere along in here, that's fine. Right in here, you're fine. This is called a sternal notch. If you want to put your fingers in there, you can get a sense of that notch and where the heads are in there. Okay, so you've got your finger then in the proximity of the sternoclavicular joint, so you're not too far from the head of the clavicle. Now let's image circling under the head and up the back of it and down front. Now what needs to be done as you visualize this is to take into consideration the depth of the body. There's a lot of space in there that you can use. You're not a two-dimensional object. You're not flat. That's what Barbara meant in her book, the title I gave you in the first class, Body Proportion Needs Depth. And so she worked a lot on images. We worked a lot together on creating images of depth. Use that depth as you come under. So we'll go under again, circling under in your thinking, up the back, over the top, and down the front. And again, think under, up the back, over the top, and down the front. Now leave your hand touching the sternoclavicular. And that, of course, the beginning of your arm in your image. And now swing your arm into your lap with that thought. Okay. And then just let your arm hang again for a moment. And I want one more circle under, up the back, over the top, and down the front. And let's swing the arm in the lap. aside now and trace the clavicle toward the sternum. So you're at the sternoclavicular articulation there, fairly close to the head of the clavicle. Okay, now you're going to think of circling under, up the back, over the top, and down the front. Under, up the back, over the top, and down the front. Now let's go under one more time. Use the depth, the anterior posterior depth. Go under, you're behind the head of the clavicle now, and now you're going up the back of it, and then over the top. Now thinking of your arm beginning there, swing the arm in your lap. Okay, and then let the arm hang down beside you. And once again, let's swing the arm in the lap. Okay, now that's a good beginning to getting a sense of the balance of the shoulders at the manubrium. So when we come back to the imagery of the shoulders and the arms hanging from the manubrium, you have a reference, you have a little process that can get you into that depth. Yes, Robert?
Is it just the head of the collarbone or just the
whole clavicle? I would circle it at the head because I'm trying to establish that this is the base of support. And I want this end to hang free. You could think under here. It would not be detrimental, actually. If you want to think space under there, that's all right. Because there is space under there, and that needs to be that the rib cage, which I'll be taking up tomorrow, is under the shoulder girdle. But for this particular process, I'm trying to establish that the base where you're getting compression support is here. So I think I'd stay with the circling here. But again, if you simply want to think under here, think space, that'd be fine. In fact, that's a good image. I'm going to point that out again tomorrow because that's a great deal of what tomorrow's lesson is going to be about. Okay, let me give you the image that we'll be working on, a couple of images for constructive rest. We're going back to constructive rest this morning. And I want to create for you now an image of separation of scapula and ribs. So we'll do two images. The first of which is this. We'll imagine that we insert a sponge between the scapula and the ribs in the border that's closest to the spine. That's called the dorsal border, and sometimes a medial border. And then imagine slipping a little sponge in between the scapula and the ribs. So we have a soft medium between the scapula and the ribs, which will discourage one from gluing the scapula on the rib cage. My observation has been that, of course, we all have different patterns. Some of us simply glue, as it were, the scapula onto the ribs, you know, hold it very tight. Others actually hold weight in there. They're actually bearing weight with those muscles. And still others, more ambitious, pull the weight from down here up into those muscles around the scapula. And they're literally holding that weight in there. Now, very few do it as grossly as I'm demonstrating, but there are all sort of subtle variations of doing that. Again, I opened the class by saying that in the upright position, the weight, the support of the torso is not done with the shoulders. of the shoulder girdle. It's floating, it's resting on the torso. It's not holding the weight of the torso up. The torso, through the spine, as I described earlier, is supporting it. So by inserting this sponge in between, that's going to be the beginning of helping you to learn to release the weight from around the shoulders in that sense. Now we've taken up the support here. So now what remains is to get back here. Now something's going to happen to that sponge. Once you see it in between the ribs and the scapula, it's going to fill with water and expand, which gives you even more space, soft space. Scapula are going to be viewed like little boats or barges. They do look like that. And they're floating on water between them and the ribs. And we're going to watch them float down to the sit bones first. And then they're going to take another journey. We'll start all over. They'll float down to the distal ends of the femur bones. And then the third journey, they'll float down to the heels. Now, this is a very sophisticated image in that there's a lot in it, because the sit bones are not going to remain as a stationary target as the scapula are floating down to them, but rather the sit bones are going to be elongating, playing tag almost with them, except in a straight line, moving down. So the scapula never really catch up with the sit bones, because the sit bones are going to be lengthening even as the scapula float down toward them. The same thing is true of the distal ends of the femur bone. They're going to be elongating as the sit bones try to catch up with them. But it's a game that is never completed. Sit bones are chasing first scapula are chasing first the sit bones, which move away from them, then the distal ends of the femur bones, and then the same thing with the heels. The heels are going to be moving down also. Down. All right. That pretty much is going to occupy us for constructive rest. Let's go into the constructive rest position, take partners, and I will lead you through this. As you go into constructive rest, I want part of getting into the rest position to be first without being tied or without the padding under your feet. I want you to do a couple of rolls to each side. I think that will help to center you so that you don't just go into the position four square. So let's do that. Do we have to take the benches? All right. That was pretty quick. You're going to lie on your back, and first thing to do, I want you to roll a couple times to each side and roll to center your ribs. Just do that to get a centering of the ribs. As you take your weight onto your side, onto the sides of the ribs, let that thrust the ribs into the spine. Just play with that for a moment. As you roll over onto your side, let the counter thrust from the floor push your ribs into your spine. Okay, for this particular one, I want you to complete the turn. What you did is fine. That's another thing. That's right. Now, come back onto your back. And notice how easy it is to do the rolling, how everything comes together that way. Do it a couple of times to each side. Let the rolling center the ribs in the sockets there, in the spine. Couple of times or so to each side, go on your back into constructive rest, and we'll put the pads under the head and balls of the feet and tie the ties around the legs. I'll tie you in.
Great tie. Look at that tie.
That's
isn't it neat?
Yeah, it's quite something. Try just a little more flexion here. I just want to see. How's it feel? Does it feel all right? Good. All right. You have a partner, Soto? Oh, good. All right. Now you're getting lined up, and your head is between the sit bones. First thing that we're going to do is to insert the imaginary sponge between the scapula and the ribs in the medial or the dorsal border of the scapula. Now, the tactile aid that we're going to give is to, first of all, take our fingers and run them around the borders of the scapula. Let me show you on the skeleton here. You'll just take your fingers and run them around the borders of the scapula, the inner border, and then the tip below, and then the outside border, and then up over the rim of the scapula here. That's called the spine of the scapula, the top of it. And then after you've done that, you're going to insert your fingers between the border of the scapula and the ribs. All right, I'm going to work with my partner now. The tactile part of going around the scapula is simply to help create the location for your partner. Okay, now I am inserting my fingers between the scapula and the ribs, and if your partner's muscle organization and or structure doesn't permit your fingers to get in there, usually you get in about a quarter of an inch or so, or a little less, a little more. But if that area doesn't permit you to get your fingers in, then just touch the medial border there, the dorsal border, and point toward the outside or laterally. And your partner can use the image of the sponge from that tactile aid. Whatever tactile aid you're getting now, see the sponge slipping from the inner border to the outer one, and it's between the scapula and the ribs. And that's in itself is a very good image, even before you watch it expand, because you can think of the sponge like a little bed between the scapula and the ribs. And it's a soft support against which the scapula can rest. That sponge expanding, water in there. See the soft space that the expanding sponge creates. Now, let's rub that area. Remove your hand from there just to restore circulation. Now, first of all, run your fingers around the borders of the scapula, the inner, the top, the outer. Touch that lower tip. Bring that to your partner's attention. And then, when you've done all that, let's insert the fingers between the scapula and the ribs. That's that inner border. And of course, if you're doing that, your fingers are pointing toward the outside border. If you're not able to get your fingers in there, again, just touch that inner border pointing toward the outside. And your partner thinks of a little sponge slipping up under the scapula, moving outward. And when you are able to see the sponge between the scapula and the ribs, think of that as a soft separation between scapula and ribs. It's a nice support, soft support, against which the scapula can rest. Then imagine the sponge getting wet, water comes in, and the sponge expands, getting thicker and thicker and thicker. Okay, now, let's rub that area. Now we're going to work on the shoulder blades as little barges or boats. And for this, we're going to see them move down to the three points, which I showed you earlier. And then the first point is the sit bones. Now, here is what I would do to establish that. Let's first of all, you may have to move your partner's arms over their bodies just to get to the scapula, but I want to take the hands and run them down the shoulders to the sit bones about two or three times to establish what that is. That the shoulder blades are floating. There's water between them. They're floating down to the sit bones. Now, the sit bones, as I explained to you, are going to be extending themselves even as the scapulae float down toward them. So touch the sit bones now, and your partner can think of the sit bones elongating. Now, to expedite the process, will you round your lips and blow through an imaginary straw? Blow. Now just let your breath be automatic. We'll do that excursion again. Just a moment. We'll let the breath re-establish itself. Now, let's round the lips and blow through the imaginary straw, and the sit bones go down to the shoulder blades are flowing down to the sit bones, which elongate to the heels and beyond. Blow. Okay. Now, while the breath is reestablishing itself, let's do the tactile aid for the scapula going down to the distal ends of the femur bones. You can take your hands and run them over the shoulder blades now, going down to the lower ends of your femur bones and back of the knees. You do that two or three times. Then, just put your hands under your partner's knees, just as you do when you put the pants legs over the hanger. Now, as you are getting this tactile aid, think of the knee ends of the femur bones extending. I'm also giving a very slight bit of support here, as I do with the hanger, just a little tiny bit. And I'm supporting that on my femur heads. Okay. All right, now, watch the shoulder blades floating down to the elongating femur bones here. Blow through the imaginary straw. Blow. let your breath be automatic. We can release our tactile aid for a moment now while the breath is reestablishing itself. Once again, let's just lift up. Watch the femur bones elongating at the knee ends and see the scapula floating toward them like little barges, but never quite catching up. Blow through the straw, blow. This time the scapula are going to float to the heels. So let's start again with the scapula. Come down the body all the way to the heels. And you can do that two or three times to establish the moving tactile aid. For the heels, for the trip to the heels. Now, since the heels are going to be elongating, touch them. Put your fingers on the mat and run the fingers to the heels. And this is a long trip for the scapula. They're going to be floating to the heels, which are moving away, elongating away from them. And that happens as you blow through the imaginary straw. Blow. Again, let's watch. The scapula has barges floating down to the heels, but don't blow yet. You want to wait for another breath to take place, another one or two, just so the breath reestablishes itself. Remember not to do forced exhalations one after the other unless you allow two or three breaths to happen in between. Okay, we're ready for another one now. Let's watch the barges floating to the elongating heels. Blow. Epaulets with the tassels on them, which would include the arms. So you run your hands over the top of the shoulders, down through the arms and fingertips. Then you take the palms of your hands and put them on the tops of the shoulders with the little finger edges to the neck and move the hands outward, indicating that the shoulders is epaulets or any soft material you like are widening away from the base of the neck. And then you can put your hands or fingers, I use my thumbs, on the tops of the shoulders, close to the base of the neck, watch the epaulets widening away from the base of the neck from this stationary tactile aid. That's it, Jamie. Now you're letting it out. Very good. You can think of the epaulets either extending or growing from the base of the neck, or releasing from the base of the neck, or melting from the base of the neck. Any of those verbs that you'd like to use is fine. Use what appeals to you. Okay, now let's smooth the wrinkles of the collar upward back here. Running your fingers up the cervical spine from the shoulder level to the base of the skull. Then will you see the head as a front half and a back half? Back half behind the cardinal coronal plane, front half in front of it. And imagine that the back half is sliding upward and the tactile aid is just to run your hands gently up the back of the skull from the base of the skull. You can actually start that really with the smoothing of the collar upward and then on up the back of the skull. And then exert a little pressure on this. I'm pulling now on the skull from the base. And we'll watch the collar smoothing up the back and the back half of the head sliding up as if it were releasing upward, that is, toward the wall behind it. At the same time, the spine is lengthening, the tailbone is growing longer. Let our partners, well, no, let them assimilate. We'll take the ties off our partners' legs. Now, put your arms down by your sides and roll over to one side or the other and just stay on your side for a moment. Just rest on your ribs. Now, we're going to do a little rocking of our partner. We're just going to rock our partner very gently. Now I want you to roll back onto your back, and you can leave your legs extended for this position. We're going to do the same thing. We're just going to rock our partners very gently. Now roll over to one side or the other, and then onto your hands and knees. Sit back on your heels. Control the trunk of your body onto your thighs. Feet extended. And you can think of the knee ends of the femur bones extending. Okay, now pass those planes through the creases. Let them come out the buttocks. Now let's watch the barges, the shoulder blades as barges, floating down to the heels as you unfold. Watch the shoulder blades floating down to the heels as you unfold. Now, as you stand on your knees, imagine the back half of your head sliding up. Bring one leg under and forward. Now you're going to use the same technique you did from changing to sitting to standing. You're going to push from the floor into the acetabulum. That's going to bring you up. Just pry yourself up. Same thing you did changing from sitting to standing. That's right. And you can balance on the femur heads. Now you can watch the central axis be vertical. And the puppeteer supporting you at the manubrium. And you let your ribs rest in your spine. Just let them settle back in the spine. As the spine elongates, which brings it in closer to the central axis. And the ribs, again, will rest against the spine. And they're getting their tensile support from the manubrium. And now let's cycle the arms above the head, thinking up the front and down the back. Now watch those shoulder blades floating down to your heels as you blow through the imaginary straw. Blow. Into the blow and let your arms drop. Now with soft elbows, slide your scapula up over the ribs and then let your arms drop. And again, just slide the scapula, let them slip up over the ribs easily, and then drop. Okay, let's help our partners in the constructive rest and we'll work on them. You're welcome. Your weight be taken by the floor and that pushing the ribs into the spine. And after you do that a couple of times or so to each side, lie on your back in constructive rest. Thank you.
All right, we'll work now on the sponge image. First thing is to locate the scapula for your partner. So here we'll go up under the scapula there and just run our fingers around the inner border and the outer border and the top of the scapula there. And then you can insert your fingers in the inner border, sometimes called the dorsal border. And that direction has to be clear, that it's from the inner border to the outer one. It's very important because we want to begin to think in terms of the shoulders opening outward rather than to be squeezed in. And then as you see the sponge between the scapula and the ribs, your attitude toward that is important as part of the image, and that is that it's a pleasant softness against which the scapula can rest. Then you see the sponge expanding. I say it gets wet, it gets wet. Use any rationale you like, but let it softly expand, creating soft space between the scapula and the ribs. Now let's rub the area. Restore any circulation we might have impeded. Go over to the other scapula now. Again, make a little tactile journey around the scapula, all borders. The lower tip is the inferior tip, the inner border, the dorsal border. The top of the scapula is called the spine of the scapula, there, that ridge. After you've made your excursion, you're going to put your fingers between the scapula and the ribs in the inner border, pointing toward the outer border. And you watch the imaginary sponge slip between the ribs and the scapula. See that again as a soft buffer between scapula and ribs. Watch the sponge expand softly, expansively, creating a released space between scapula and ribs. Now let's rub that border. Scapula's little barges. first trip they're going to take will be down to the sit bones. So let's slide our hands from the shoulder level over the scapula down to the sit bones. Sliding the hands over the scapula down through the sit bones. Over the scapula, down through the sit bones. The sit bones elongate themselves, so we'll just touch them. And before you start doing the image of the barges, you can just think of the sit bones growing long for a moment. Now, see water between the scapula and the ribs. I mentioned that as part of the image, but I didn't emphasize it, so you might have forgotten about it. But there ought to be something between the ribs and the scapula in your image. Since the scapula are being viewed as barges, watch the barges floating on the water, which is between them and the ribs. Okay, now as you watch that happen, blow through the straw. Blow. Now let your breath be completely automatic. Okay. Now once again, the sit bones elongating and the scapulae as little barges floating down to try to catch up with the sit bones. Blow. Let's set up the destiny of the second trip. So we'll slide our hands from shoulder level over the scapulae down to the lower ends of the femur bones. Then, you can give tactile aid here, taking your fingers and just pulling up under the knees here just a slight bit. Your partner can imagine the lengthening knee ends of the femur bones. And again, the scapula are going to float towards those lengthening knee ends of the femur bones, never quite catching up with them. The barges are on water between the scapula and the ribs. The barges are the scapulae. Blow. Okay, let your breath be automatic. We release our tactile aid momentarily. Okay, once again, the scapulae as barges floating on water, which is over the ribs, down to the elongating distal ends of the femur bones, knee ends. You'll round your lips and blow through the imaginary straw. Blow. Third trip. this time we'll be moving down to the heels. Let's get tactile aid from the shoulders down over the sit bones to the lower ends of the femur bones down to the heels. Holding the shoulders down through the sit bones down to the distal ends of the femur bones down to the heels. And then once again over the shoulders and down through the sit bones down to the distal ends of the femur bones and down to the heels. Touch the heels. Now you're going to watch the shoulder blades as barges floating down to the heels, which themselves are elongating. It's as if the heel, when I say elongates, it can elongate in almost any direction, but I think I would like to include the heel elongating as if it were sinking into the floor. All right, now watch the shoulder blades floating as barges. Round your lips and blow through the imaginary straw. Blow. Okay, let your breath be on automatic. And once again, let's watch the barges floating down to the heels. See the heels elongating themselves. And around your lips and blow through the imaginary straw. Blow. Let's watch the shoulders as, you can let the arms rest down there if that's what you like, it's fine. The shoulders are epaulets, and let's take the tassels through the fingertips. Then put the palms of your hands over the tops of your partner's shoulders, little finger edges touching the base of the neck, and now just widen your hands away from the base of the neck over the tops of the shoulders. That indicates that the shoulders are being imaged as opening out from the base of the neck. Then I take my thumbs and put them on the tops of the shoulders a little behind the cardinal coronal plane. And we now are going to watch the shoulders widening away from the base of the neck. Expanding away from the base of the neck, growing away from the base of the neck. The key word is releasing away from the base of the neck, or melting away from the base of the neck. Okay, now let's take the smoothing of the collar. Let's smooth the collar up the back. Then let's think of the head with that division of a front half and a back half by the corner coronal plane, and see the back half sliding upward. So continue your line of movement up the back of the neck, up the back of the skull, the back of the head. Just continue that line. It's like one elongating line, really. And then after you've given the moving tactile aid, grasp your partner's head from the base and back and just pull a little bit on it to give a tactile message that the collar is lengthening upward and the back of the head lengthens upward. And the lower end of your spine is lengthening in the other direction. Take the ties off our partner's legs. Now, this time I want you to roll over onto, I want to try this group a little different from the other. Roll over onto your tummy and turn your head to one side, whatever's comfortable for you there. We're going to rock you from that standpoint. Okay. That's right. And the arms by your side. That's very good. Okay, let's do a little rocking in this position. Just a nice, gentle rocking action. Okay, now let's finish this off by taking the line from the shoulders of the spine, lengthening, and take that all the way down to the heels. Sit back on your heels. Hold it up. And you can watch the imaginary plane passing through the thigh creases, coming out the buttocks, the knee into the femur bones extending. fold, watch the scapula as barges floating down to your heels. Bring one leg under and forward, and you can watch the back half of the head sliding up. The spine is lengthening. Okay, pause a moment. Now, as you change to standing, you're going to push from the floor into the acetabulum. The back half of the head is going to slide up as you do that. That's the idea. It doesn't dip down. Stay. Okay. Balance on your femur head once you're up. And see your central axis vertical. The puppeteer is giving you support from the manubrium. You can extend that to the idea that the back half of your head is rising, same as the puppeteer really, and the spine is lengthening, the coccyx lengthening downward as the back half of the head slides up. And the arms as shoulders are hanging from the manubrium, which remember has the upward floating quality. Okay, let's cycle the arms above the head, bringing up the front and down the back. And as the arms go above your head, let the spine get longer. Instead of leaning back, let the spine get longer. Okay, now you're going to watch the shoulder blades as barges floating to your heels. You'll blow through the straw. At the end of the blowing, let your arms drop. Blow. Soft elbows, slide your scapula up over the ribs. That's why they don't have ligaments, so they can move easily and a long way, and then I'll drop. And again, softly slide the scapula up over the ribs. Soft elbows. And then drop. Okay. I'm going to do a quick improvisation with the shoulders. Ruth, would you and Danny supply the music for us?
Thursday and today. Okay.
I thought that...
Friday.
Yeah.
But I just had a cancellation.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, today I'm going to have lunch. Somebody invited me out to move in. And then some other people have been invited on Thursday.
Well, that's great.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. Thanks for the goodies. I just had part of them last night. I was good. I didn't pig out. And I'm going to enjoy the rest of them tonight when I get in. You're late. Thank you.
There you go. I'll see you tomorrow.
Okay. Thanks. You betcha. You're welcome. Tell Teresa, I hope she gets better.
Okay. Is that ginger and salt or is it hilarious?
No, I just take fresh ginger. Great.
Yeah.
Put in a little piece of cloth string around it. Heat water just below the boiling point. And let it steep in there for 5 to 10 minutes, like a tea bag.
Mm-hmm.
And then take whatever you're going to use for a compress, like a face cloth or a towel, soak it in there, and then put it on the throat as hard as you can stand it.
You said that in the ginger.
Yeah, on the ginger water.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you're making a kind of a ginger tea.
Yeah.
And
cloth in there.
Yeah, stick your cloth in there and put it on the throat. It really will help to relieve that soreness.
Yeah.
Also, gargling with salt water along with it will be good too. Fine, that's pretty good.
A couple, 3 times a day or something?
Yeah, do it for about 10 minutes, 5 or 10 minutes. One other thing about the ginger I wanted to tell you. Don't boil the ginger ever. It must be below the boiling point, because if you boil it,
He takes the effectiveness of it away on that. Yeah, that's our hope. Use about a half a cup of grated ginger for a gallon of water. It'll make it feel better. I do it all the time. Ciao. Okay. Okay, folks, now you're going to... I want you to improvise with the image of... the shoulder girdle, centering it, the barges floating, any aspect of what we did with the shoulders, bring it into your movement. Just explore shoulder maneuverability and mobility and centeredness. Shoulder mobility is its support on the manubrium, its centeredness at the manubrium, and its ultimate support through the spine. So you can trace the whole flow of support. You don't have to just stay literally with the shoulder, but the fact that the shoulder is free because of its spinal support. Ultimately. Hey, thank you very much. That was lovely. Have a good day. We'll continue tomorrow.
I have four questions.
Sure.